And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
Welcome to another edition of the Awakening Podcast here on American Family Radio. I'm your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson. Great to be with you again today. And I want to say right off the bat, happy Mother's Day to all of the wonderful mothers out there who will soon be celebrating Mother's Day. You know, I've got a lot to say about this. There are some issues I want to bring up, but I wanted to first get this out of the way. First of all, I just want to say thank God for wonderful mothers. Thank God for wonderful mothers. You know, just before this program, my wife and I were having a discussion about this because we have our National Awakening Coalition conference call every Tuesday at noon. And my wife was the guest speaker. We originally planned for Tina Deskovich, but she got called away by none other than the President of the United States. I jokingly said, you know, I told her that, you know, tell the President he can wait. But needless to say, I was only joking that she was called into a conference call with the President of the United States and could not be on our call. My wife stepped in and did a tremendous job. I said it was a blessing in disguise because my wife got into not the politics of motherhood so much as just the reality of motherhood and its meaning and its importance to children, its importance to society, its importance to the world. And after the program, my wife and I were having a discussion about motherhood because, you know, the problem with the breakdown of the family, for the most part, is not absentee women, it's absentee men. And again, thank God for all the men who are doing their job, but there's so many men who aren't. So many men who have abandoned their children, so many men who have impregnated women and then walked away and had children born to women that had been their girlfriends or even in some cases their wives. They just walked away from the children. In many cases, children never even knew their father. So the women, for the most part, the women have stayed. The women have been there. The women have been the nurturers. The women have been the caretakers. The women have been the educators. The women have provided the succor and the affection and the comfort that children desperately need as part of their growing up. So I just want to say thank God for wonderful mothers in our culture who are dedicated to giving their children a chance in life. In fact, I said during that conference call, I was reminded, and I'm sure you all know this, but it's just an interesting fact. You know, George Washington had no formal education. You know who educated George Washington? His mother. His mother taught him. His mother educated him. Tina Deskovich was going to be on for Moms for Liberty, and she was going to talk about the fact that mothers had stepped up because when you, again, while fathers certainly have a role to play in this and an important leadership role, when you start stepping between the educational role of mothers and you start taking as the state the rightful place of mothers to be the nurturers and the moral guides of their children, you know, you're waking up the mama bear. There is no question about it. You are awakening the mama bear. And these ladies around the country have become ferocious in terms of defending their right to say what their children should and should not be exposed to, should and should not see, and should and should not be taught, or maybe not educated, but indoctrinated. And so God bless those mothers who are on the front line in the home. As you know, I was reflecting on it. And while I think I was a pretty decent father, My father was a good father to me, even though I was in foster care for the first 10 years of my life. When my father finally took over, I'd say he was a great father to me. And I think I was a decent father to my children. I don't want to pat myself on the back because I know I made my share of mistakes, but and I think I was a good father to my children. But there is not even a question that my wife spent more time with my children than I did. There's not, I mean, it's not even debatable that she was there for our children in many times, many cases, when I was not. I was busy working. I was busy trying to advance my career. I was busy trying to save the world, you know. Young, ambitious, full of energy, and in some cases, with a mistaken set of priorities, frankly. I'll confess that, you know, thinking, you know, I've got to get out here and get it done. And what I should have been doing was always putting my family first and letting the rest of that kind of take care of itself. But, you know, when you're young and full of juice and, you know, you think you've got so much to offer and so there's so much to do and you're bursting with energy, you know, this is what I think men are just inclined to do left to themselves. But those wives, those mothers are often there, even when they work, they're still there with those children more often, certainly in my case. And I dare say you may be an exception. Guys listening, you may be an exception. Ladies listening, you might be an exception. But let's face it, for the most part, it is the women who are there doing the nurturing, doing the educating, doing the bandaging up, doing the comforting, doing the explaining. And so I just want to take a moment to say, mothers, thank you. God bless you. God bless you for the wonderful job that you do. You all know some of my background. If you've been listening to me for a while, you know some of my background. You know that I was born into a broken home, and at the age of 14 months old, I was placed in foster care. So from the age of 14 months old, which is an infant, and I have no memory of that, of course, my first memories, I think I was about maybe 4 or 5 years old before my first memories as a child. But my foster mother, Miss Beck, her name was Rebecca Mollett. People called her Miss Beck. That's what my father, my biological father who would visit, he called her Miss Beck. But I called her Mama. And that was my mama, as far as I knew, because as I said before, sadly, my biological mother got caught up with Jehovah's Witnesses, the cult. And that cult just kind of took her away from me particularly because she didn't have custody of me, but in many ways it took her away from even my two brothers and sisters on her side that she had because she devoted her entire life to that mess. That's why, by the way, I warn anybody, and I'm warning you now, so hear me well, don't ever have somebody tell you, oh, I'm studying with Jehovah's Witnesses, and you say something like, well, at least you're studying the Bible, or at least you're doing something positive, or, well, at least you're not out there. No. Studying with Jehovah's Witnesses, you might as well be going out robbing liquor stores. That's right. It's just, you know, in some ways, you know what? It's worse. You know why? Because you're doing something supremely wicked and evil and perverse, but you're convinced that it's righteous. And therefore, you are harder to reach than the guy who is robbing the liquor store, because most of the time he knows what he's doing is wrong. And you have a chance of saying to him, listen, friend, listen, brother, listen, sister, listen, whatever they're doing. You can say, you know, God has something better for you. But you get caught up in these cults like Jehovah's Witnesses and people think, oh, I'm righteous. I'm good. I'm doing wonderful things. And they're going to bust hell wide open and take everybody they can with them. As you can imagine, I have no use for that mess whatsoever. And not just because it captured my mother, but because I just know it's evil, too. She was a young girl, I think 19, 20, when she joined it and stayed in it most of her life. I tried to pray her out of it, and I don't know whether before she left this earth, and my mother did pass away last year. I don't know whether when she left this earth, she got it right with God before departing or not. I know I certainly prayed hard, and I'm hoping to meet her in heaven, but I won't be meeting her in heaven because she was one of the Jehovah's Witnesses, because that stuff will take you to hell. But that aside, okay? Miss Beck was my mama. And I tell you something, folks. That woman loved me. Yes, indeed. She loved me. Because, and this was both the blessing and the curse in that. The blessing was, I could do no wrong. And if I did any wrong, she was going to defend me anyway. So, you know. So first, I could do no wrong. And then secondly, if I did any wrong, my mama was going to defend me. she was going to step up and defend me. Either he didn't do it, or he's been misunderstood, or somebody else made a mistake, or whatever. I said, now that's a blessing. But the curse was, folks, it spoiled me. Because I got away with stuff that my daddy would have never allowed me to get away with. And rightly so. Because it was self-destructive. But, you know, she had the heart of a mama. And she loved her son. Because as far as she was concerned, I was her son. And, you know, I could just do no wrong. And you mothers listening to me now, maybe that's not what you're doing, but you certainly have met people like that. And she was well-meaning, and I can't criticize her for it because, look, I enjoyed it. She pulled me out of a couple of fires that, you know, that would have engulfed me. I mean, I left there 10 years old, and yes, by the time I was 10 years old, she was pulling me out of fires that could have really had a devastating impact on my life, because they would have set me up to maybe to go to juvenile detention school and get involved with an even rougher crowd than I already was involved with, or, you know, get matriculated into that whole criminal culture. And she was my mama. By the way, you know, I preached her funeral. When she passed away, they called on me to preach her funeral. They knew that that's exactly what she would have wanted. And of course, I hadn't lived with her for 15 years, but I would still go see her every time I was in Chester. Every time I was in Chester, Pennsylvania, where she lived, I would go see her. She ultimately succumbed to cancer. But I would go and see her and just enjoy time with her. And when I finally got saved, folks, because I really believe my mama was saved, and I can't say that she was perfect, of course, because even at 10 years old, I probably saw things I shouldn't have seen and heard things I probably shouldn't have heard. But don't get me wrong, she was a wonderful woman, but I'm just saying, just like all human beings, she was not perfect. Now, my foster father, Willie, was just a footnote. I mean, he just happened to be there. And I never really felt close to him. I didn't have any antipathy toward him. I didn't dislike the man or anything like that. But he just wasn't, this is the only way I can put it, but this is my recollection as a child. He was just irrelevant. He was just there. But my mama, she was there for me. And she kind of led in terms of how I would be dealt with. He didn't really discipline me at all. She was the one who always threatened discipline. Of course, she never followed through with it because I was too fast. But look, I could tell you some stories, and I won't bore you with those. But when I think of motherhood, I think of her as my own mother. Unfortunately, I wish I could say the same thing about my biological mother, but it just didn't work out that way. I loved my mother, honored her. My biological mother loved her, honored her, but there was never real closeness there. It just, because by the time I was even getting to know her, I was already close to being a grown man. So that just didn't happen. But my mama was my mama. In fact, you all may have heard me say that, and I say this for those of you who have adopted children, for those of you who are foster parents, for those of you who are taking care of children that you're not necessarily the biological mother, let me tell you, folks, I love me some Rebecca Mollett. Because as far as I was concerned, she was a mother that I didn't have. And I honored her all the days of my life. And so I just want to say to all you mothers out there, we honor you and bless you. Now, the other obvious example of wonderful motherhood is my own wife. We've been married for 54 years. My wife has been a wonderful mother and still is, by the way, to our children. Still is to our children. They are all very close to her. She is very close to them. We're a close family anyway, thank God. We've had our share of difficulties like anybody would, but it certainly not been caused by my wife. Just the devil just jumping in the middle of your kids sometimes and trying to get them all messed up and get them estranged from their parents. So we've had a little of that too. But praise God, he has worked pretty much all of that out. But my wife has been the stalwart in the process. My wife's always been the one who, just like my mama was for me, even when they're acting contrary, she nevertheless kind of loves them through it. You know what I mean? Not that I ever stopped loving my children. Don't get me wrong. When we're having some difficulties or somebody's behaving in a way that, you know, you don't really approve of and you think is not good for them. And it's always about it not being good for them, not whether it's good for us, but not being good for them. And, you know, a father kind of looks like, what are you doing? You know, it's like, and the mother kind of says, well, come here, baby. You know, it's just a whole different thing, you know, generally speaking. And I know I'm generalizing, but the generalizations are undoubtedly true, even though there are exceptions. But look, happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there, and thank God for all that you do. Here's the other thing that I was going to say, and I'll end this little pericope, if you will, on motherhood. Not that I'm an expert on motherhood, needless to say, but my wife and I were also talking about this notion that, you know, I don't think I've ever really stopped to think about this until recently. And don't ask me why. I've really thought about it recently. And of course, I've heard this and people have said this. But you know what I mean? There are times when something that you've heard that you know strikes you. And it just began to strike me recently. You know, there is something different about one human being carrying another human being inside her body. Something that men simply don't do, and we don't know anything about it other than to observe it from afar. But that mother carries that child in her body. That mother feels every kick, every twist, every turn. That mother has to watch what she eats, because what she eats, her baby eats. What she drinks, her baby drinks. What goes into her body goes to that baby's body. That mother has to watch her health and her behavior, because her health and her behavior can affect that baby. She is taking care of that baby from the moment of conception. And what are men doing? No disrespect meant to us men, but men are simply watching and going, well, really? Really? You're having a, oh, really? Wonderful. She might have known it by that time for a month. You know, and you find out and you go, oh, wow, she feels it down on the inside of her. You know it because it's announced to you. It is an amazing and miraculous thing. And you know, I really do believe this. It creates a different kind of bond. And that doesn't mean men don't love their children as much as women do. It doesn't mean that. But it is different. It's different. Because no man can ever say, I carried you inside me for 9 months. No man can say that. I don't care what these idiot transgender crazies say. A man can have a baby. Yeah, right. Give me a break. A confused woman who gets it in her deluded mind that she's a man can have a baby, but she's a woman. But a man can't do it. I don't care how much Harvard says that, or any other idiot so-called Ivy League, ivory tower nutcases say it, thinking themselves to be wise. Romans chapter 1 says they became fools. That's exactly what they became. Ladies, sisters, mothers, what you do cannot be replicated. What you do, no man can ever do. Thank you for doing it. Because not a single one of us would be here but for a mother willing to do it. Praise God. So happy Mother's Day, mothers. And I am honored to be able to say so. Happy Mother's Day to you, to my own wife, and to all the mothers across this great nation. God bless you. All right. Well, look, let me also mention to you that we still have a few complimentary tickets available for the Stand Awards dinner that's going to be in Leesburg, Virginia. So if you are listening to me right now and you are in that area, or you're in North Carolina, or you're in Maryland, or you're in West Virginia, or you're in Northern Virginia, or maybe even Central Virginia, like around Richmond, and you want to come, just email us at awardsdinner@standinc.net. Now, that's just like it sounds. awardsdinner@standinc.net. Standinc.net. And just tell us, I'd like complimentary tickets. I'm an AFR listener. And we will be happy to provide you complimentary tickets. Now, we were allowing four per family, but of course we're getting down to the wire now, and that's going to be a little bit difficult. If you really need four, then you probably ought to call us and tell us the situation, and we have to figure out if we can squeeze out four tickets. But we're still willing to give two per person for a husband and wife, particularly, or if you're a CEO. Or if you run an organization and you got a key staff member that you'd like to bring, you want them to experience it, we think we can accommodate two of you. But we are down to the wire now with the tickets. There are only a few left, and if you want to take advantage of that, get in touch with us right away. And if you're listening to me right now and the internet is not your thing, just call us at 757-375-6444. That's 757-375-6444, and tell us, look, I'd like to go to the Stand Awards dinner. We're giving out the George Washington Award for taking a stand. And see, I just mentioned George Washington. I said, George Washington was educated by his mother. He had no formal educational training. His mother taught him, yet he was well-read. He was well-spoken. He wrote well, probably not the fluent writer that a Thomas Jefferson was, but then again, who is? who among us has ever written as well as Thomas Jefferson wrote? But nevertheless, George Washington was articulate and well-spoken and well-written as well. And you garner that from his speeches and his writings and some of the notes that he left of things that he never really got to speak, but that he was thinking. And that education came initially, at least, from his mama. so So once again, we're giving the George Washington Award for Take a Stand because George Washington, as far as I am concerned, is the essential man. And to give the George Washington Award, in my view, is to give one of the highest awards you can ever give to an American. And so if you want to be a part of that and honor these great patriots, we're honoring, as I mentioned before, Tina Deskovich, Moms for Liberty, speaking of moms, Kevin Freeman, the Economic War Room, Walter Hoy, Issues for Life Foundation, Stacy Washington, Stacy on the right, and Robert L. Woodson of the Woodson Center. I want to be there to honor these great patriots. Please get in touch with us and let us know. We'll be happy to provide you with complimentary tickets. Now, if you say to me, oh, Bishop Jackson, that's awfully kind of you, but I want to help you. I want to support you. All you have to do is go to standamerica.us. That's standamerica.us. And you can give there online, or if you'd like to send a check to us, the address is very simple. I'll give it to you. Make checks payable to Stand Foundation, Stand Foundation, S-T-A-N-D, Foundation, 1024 Centerbrook Lane, Suite F as in Foxtrot, -211, Suite F as in Foxtrot, -211, and that's in Suffolk, Virginia. The zip code is 23434. I'll give you a chance to get a pen if you want to write that down so you can make sure you get it. Again, just make checks payable to Stand Foundation and send them to 1024-1024 Centerbrook Lane. And by the way, Centerbrook is with an E on the end of it, Centerbrook Lane. And that's Suite F as in Frank, -211, Suite F as in Frank, -211, and that's Suffolk, Virginia, 23434. All right. I continue to be stunned by the level of degeneracy that we see in our culture, which I have to readily confess, thank God for Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump is at least, he's doing something, to tell you the truth, he's doing something I didn't really have a whole lot of expectation that he would do, but he's doing it. And you know what it is? He's not only seeking to craft regulatory and legislative solutions to the problems that we face, but he's actually pushing back against the depravity of the culture. He's actually trying to steer the culture in a more positive and productive direction. And this is, this, folks, I have longed for this since Ronald Reagan. And I really believe that Donald Trump is doing more than Ronald Reagan did. So for example, let's just take the issue that's perhaps most prominent in the news right now, which is the illegal alien invasion that Donald Trump is trying to roll back. If you all recall, when he first ran, they accused him of being a racist because he said, they're not sending us their best. They're sending us robbers and rapists. And I'm paraphrasing. He may not have listed it quite this way, but this is in effect what he said. He definitely said, they're not sending us their best. They're sending us robbers and rapists and murderers and thieves and drug dealers and so on and so forth. And the mainstream, or I should say the lamestream media, just went ballistic. Oh, he's a racist. He's a racist. He's putting down brown people, blah, 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 blah. Now, forgive the lawyer in me, but I heard him say, they're not sending us their best, which automatically implies that there are good people in these countries, but those are not the ones being sent to us. I don't know how that's racist, because he wasn't saying everybody in these countries, they're all murderers, they're all rapists, they're all robbers. He said, no, no, no. He said, they're not sending us their best, which implies there are good people there, but they're not the ones who are coming across the border illegally. Well, okay, that's kind of axiomatic, isn't it? Kind of pro forma. In one sense, you don't really need to say that because they're breaking the law to come. So if they were the best, they would find another way to do that, wouldn't they? A legitimate way to come into our country, right? Of course. That's what one would expect. Donald Trump was more right even than I thought he was when he said it. And I thought he was right when he said it the first time. But he was even more right than I realized. Because now we've come to realize what? And just follow me with this, because it might not be obvious yet where I'm going, but you'll see in a second. We've now come to understand that the whole illegal alien invasion was engineered by the drug cartels, who found another and perhaps even more lucrative source of income by charging people $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 to get them across the border illegally, and then turning them into sex slaves, drug mules, slaves in whatever capacity they needed them in order to pay back what they could not pay them to get across the border. So they're adding cash, they're adding personnel, they're bringing fentanyl, they're sending human traffickers, drug dealers, gang members across our border illegally. And all of it is being engineered by some of the most evil people on the face of the earth. It's worse than we imagined even when President Trump said it. Because it's obvious this is a demonically inspired enterprise. And I'm right to call it an enterprise, because it proved to be as lucrative, if not more lucrative, than the drug trade itself. And let's face it, in a very real sense, a whole lot less downside. Because the human trafficking part, you don't have drugs to try to store, right? Human beings can maneuver themselves to try to get away from being caught. Drugs can't. When you find the drugs, they don't get up and run. Human beings can run. They can hide. They can duck. They can try to disappear. And as far as we know, at least, you don't have drug dealers killing civilians and killing each other over the human trafficking trade. Now, maybe they were, but we know they were over drug territory. We know they were doing that. But you didn't get that sense. You got the sense that they were kind of all cooperating and just raking in the money. Maybe they divided up the border. I don't know. But the point is, that whole enterprise was demonically inspired, and I really believe for this purpose, to denigrate and destabilize American culture. That's where I'm going with this. To denigrate and destabilize American culture. And by the way, I have, if you've heard me recently, I have come to call what was formerly known as the Democrat Party the Demoncrat Party, because I really believe that it has become a demonic cult. And this is indicative of it. Look at the people now. And by the way, I used to say tongue in cheek, but with a lot of truth behind it, the cartel should have been sending Joe Biden a royalty check. Because he was making money for them hand over fist. Well, now I realize he probably should have been sending the entire Democrat Party, Demoncrat Party, a royalty check or royalty checks. Because they were making, I don't know the numbers I heard, but billions of dollars a month in human trafficking. A month. And the Democrat Party might as well share it in the wealth, because they were helping them every way they could and still are. Except Donald Trump has stepped in and stopped the flow, cut off that source of income. You realize Donald Trump has in one fell swoop not only destroyed the Democrat Party's hope for the future power that they want to hold in our country, the hegemony they want to have, the absolute control they want to have, because this is how they plan to do it. But he's also cut off a major source of income for the cartels that live on the other side of our southern border. It is a masterstroke, folks. But think also about this. Think about the people that the Democrat Party is now choosing to lionize. Remember, it is their party members, their allies, who wanted to tear down the statues of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, even Frederick Douglass, just James Madison. Go down the line. Important American figures that helped shape our history. They want to destroy that history. They want to destroy any sense of legitimacy for our country, and they want to destroy any sense of respect and honor for our forefathers. America's not legitimate. Our forefathers are not legitimate. Therefore, we are not legitimate. America's not legitimate. It won't become legitimate until they remake it as some kind of Marxist utopia. Because that's really what they're after. So look at the people they have chosen to lionize, to exalt. And I go all the way back to George Floyd. George Floyd was a counterfeiter, or at least passed counterfeit money. He was a fentanyl addict. And because he got into a very unfortunate situation with a police officer who should have known better than to sit on the man's neck that way, and he ends up dying in that circumstance. But it's not enough to simply recognize, okay, here was a man who should not have died in police custody that way. And so we have to punish the police officer who did that, and we've done that. But no, that's not enough. We want to turn George Floyd into a folk hero. We want to build statue. We tear down the statue of George Washington, put up a statue of George Floyd. I mean, are you kidding me? We can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can understand something wrong was done to George Floyd, and it ended in his tragic death. And at the same time, understand George Floyd was not a good guy. And though he does not deserve to die the way he died, he certainly doesn't deserve to have any statues put up of him. As if he's this wonderful figure. I mean, Joe Biden praising him. You know, he's had more impact than Martin Luther King. I mean, that maybe should be the number one sign of Joe Biden's dementia. If you think that George Floyd is a more important figure than Martin Luther King, you got BBs for brains, buddy. Something's wrong with you. But that's where we are. And this young guy who stabbed this kid, it'll come to me, but who stabbed this kid because he was in the wrong tent. And this other young man tried to move him out of the tent. They've raised, I forget the amount of money now, but I think it's close to $500,000. It's at least $300,000, maybe the last time I heard. But I think it may be close to $500,000. Suddenly, he's a folk hero. Um, it's mind-boggling. You get into a little fracas and disagreement with a guy and you stab him in the heart because he thinks you are in the wrong place. And even the, look, he may or may not have been wrong to try to move him out or whatever. But he didn't try to hit him in the head with a baseball bat. He didn't try to, he didn't even punch him. My understanding is all he did was reach out, maybe grabbed him by the arm or something. And again, that, maybe he shouldn't have done that. But you don't stab somebody in the heart for that. I said, you move your arm away. You pull back. You say, hey, you know, what are you doing? You don't go from, you've insulted me, to now I'm going to kill you. But that's where we are. And then this guy, Abrega Garcia. This guy is an MS-13 gang member. There's not, that's not even a dispute. They want to dispute whether the MS-13 was on his fingers. Look, he had all the indicia on his knuckles of gang membership, of MS-13 membership. And every symbol on his knuckles was intended, I think that probably the MS-13 was intended to interpret what those particular symbols meant, because each one symbolized one of the letters or numbers in MS-13. Twice accused by his wife of battery. And you've got people going down there turning him in. He's another folk hero now. Oh, you know. What a wonderful man this is. This Maryland man. You know, folks, they're oh my goodness. this young man, I didn't even know I was going to be Let's see if I can. Here we go. Austin Metcalf. That's the young boy who was killed. Carmelo Anthony, that's his name. Carmelo Anthony suddenly, he's a hero. And they've raised, let me see, well, hundreds of thousands at this point. They had one fundraiser raise $60,000. I mean, here we are, Stan is fighting for this country to help us remain one nation under God, fighting for people across all racial and cultural lines to uphold our Judeo-Christian values and principles, our constitutional ideals, free market, family. And I'll tell you something, folks, having a fundraiser that raises $60,000 for us, oh, that's a stretch. And this kid has got money being raised for him easily because he stabbed another kid who had no weapon, clearly, who posed no threat to his life. The only way you can use deadly force, folks, is if you have reason to believe that you are in imminent danger of bodily harm, of serious bodily harm or death. And that there's nothing alleged in this that suggests that. So here we've got these three people now that I've talked about that we have to do something for them. And we could go on. Because I'm wondering now, I'm sure you all know about this father who ran over a police officer and killed him because his son was killed in a shootout the day before, by running from a stolen car and firing at police officers while he ran, and he was fatally wounded. And his father runs into a police officer who had nothing to do with the event that led to his son's death. The police officer had nothing to do with it. In fact, he was retired. And I think he was come back. He was doing some extra duty at, I think, some event for a school or something. But you know, he just happened to be doing something decent, but he officially was retired. He kills him. I'm waiting for the statue to be built of him. Or to be created of him. Rodney Hinton now faces aggravated murder in the death of this deputy. I'm waiting for people to say, well, you know what? That's what he gets. They took down one of us. We take down one of them. I mean, folks, this is the insanity that is happening in our country right now. I mean, who am I leaving out? Because this stuff seems to be happening more and more. Where you get some person commits some kind of heinous crime and people are defending him like he deserves accolades. It's, or at the very least, you know, the judges, you can't arrest your legal aliens without a warrant. Well, if they're here illegally, did they come by due process? Well, then they don't get due process to leave. If you enter our country illegally, the moment you are caught, you should be subject to deportation, period. I don't care how many children you fathered. I don't care what you've done, where you were. If you came here illegally, when we catch you, you are to go summarily. Period. But oh no! We've got to, you know, these people are paragons of virtue. It's like I said about the dreamers. I just categorically resent that, dreamers. Now I don't want to punish a child for the misdeed of the parent, but that doesn't make you a hero either. How about all the American dreamers? How about all the children in America who can't go to college because they're sending illegal aliens to that school? Or they can't go to college because they got some sort of stupid DEI program and they're sending people who don't know math and they have to be remedially prepared to take on the college work, and you deny that opportunity to some kid who studied his backside off and prepared himself and he's ready, but he can't get in because you're busy dealing with some illegal alien or some DEI person who you want to have that opportunity. I mean, this is insane. And in the meantime, you've got we don't know her name, and I've got to get ready to go. But this Maryland student graduating with a 4.7 GPA denied graduation. She's fulfilled her requirements, except she refused to attend the so-called quote unquote LGBTQ health class, which requires affirming support for the LGBTQ community. And because she was willing to do neither, they have denied her diploma. This case is probably going to end up in the Supreme Court. And I trust that she will win because they're violating this child's rights all over the place. She's not a hero, you see. Standing up for her faith, standing up for her religion, standing up for her right as an American citizen, not to have her conscience violated. But oh, no, she's a villain. You got to punish her. No, Abrego Garcia is a hero. Now George Floyd is a hero. Carmelo Anthony's a hero, but not this child. No, uh-uh. She's not a hero. She's not a hero. You see how this situation has been inverted? This, folks, to me, is the very definition of a demonic cult. You make evil good and good evil. You put darkness for light and light for darkness. You put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. And you are wise in your own eyes and prudent in your own sight. There it is right there. Woe to them. That's demonic. And look, thank God for President Trump. But again, it's going to take all of us standing up against this stuff. You know, I said when I spoke at Fearless Roll Call, Jason Whitlock's annual men's conference, I was back for the second year. And I said, we know we have moms for liberty. Maybe we need dads for sanity. And so we are working on a project right now called my organization Stand, Dads for Sanity. Because it's time for fathers to stand up and say, this insanity has got to stop. Or at least it's not coming into my house. It's not coming into my family. It's not going to be taught to my children. I'm not having it. You put moms for liberty and dads for sanity together, and I'll tell you what you've got. You have got an explosive combination of victory there. And I, of course, mean explosive in terms of the spiritual and moral impact. I'm not talking about violence. So I know you all know that, but I have to say that, folks, because these leftists are so nutty that they can propose violence. Did you hear about this Crockett woman telling a graduating class, I know how to pull out a chair and I know how to pick up a chair, implying picking up a chair and hitting somebody over the head with it? I mean, again. Now that's the kind of thing you would think you ought to boo and say, how dare you come here and suggest that we're so stupid and so inarticulate and so ineffective that instead of debating the issue and seeking to persuade people to our point of view, we got to pick up a chair and hit somebody over the head, and that's the way we're going to win. Yeah, well, you know who's thinking that is? The devils. And so it's going to take us, you and I. I said to the men at that conference, I'll say the same thing to all of you, not just men, but to you women as well. In this age of madness, we've got to have clarity about what is right. We've got to have courage to stand up in the fight. And we've got to have conviction to do something. Take that clarity, take that conviction, take that courage and act in the name of Jesus. Show up at that school board meeting. Show up at that city council meeting. Go to that regulatory board meeting. Go to that drag queen story hour time or whatever they're trying to do and make clear we don't accept this. This is evil. This is wrong. This is disgusting. This is degenerate. We don't hate anybody, but we do hate what this stuff represents, and we're not going to have it in our community. We're not going to have it. Have our children exposed to it. And I know they'll, you know, call you all kinds of names and whatnot, but, you know, blessed are you when men revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Jesus said, rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. Okay, I better go. I'm way over the time, but I've gotten exorcised with the righteousness of God, you know. And godly angry over this demonic push that is going on all around us. And there's nothing wrong. You know, the Bible says, be angry and sin not. There's nothing wrong with being angry. There's nothing wrong with righteous anger as long as we don't sin. So God bless each and every one of you. I love you. I'm praying for you. Don't forget, May the 16th, our Stand Awards dinner. Complimentary tickets are available to you. Email us at awardsdinner@standinc.net or call us at 757-375-6444. Courtesy of American Family Radio, one of our sponsors. And in the meantime, you know what to do. By the way, if you are an AFR listener and you come to the dinner, please make sure I get a chance to say hello to you. Stand up, step up, speak up, refuse to back up, because we cannot be defeated if we will not quit. Because we are on God's side. God bless everybody.